It's the new year and time for the new you. You've thought about running for political office, but don't know where to start. Before you start any planning, you need to secure your name online with a yourname.vote web domain. This means your constituents will know they are learning about the real you when they surf the web. Secure your domain from GoDaddy.com today.
Welcome to Breaking Battlegrounds. I'm your host, Chuck Warren. Today, we are honored to have with us Congresswoman Carol Miller. She represents West Virginia's 1st Congressional District, and she also serves on the Committee on the Ways and Means, a very prized committee assignment. Congratulations on getting that. She is a mother of two. It's two sons, right? Am I correct on that?
Yes, you are.
7 grandchildren. And she's married to her husband, Matt. They live in Huntington, and she owns and operates Swan Ridge Bison Farm and manages real estate. And she's been in Congress since 2018. Congresswoman Miller, welcome to the show.
Well, good afternoon, and thank you.
So the first most important question I'm going to ask all day is this. How was raising two sons prepared you for managing the chaos of Congress?
There were many times when they were just like puppies wrestling around. I mean, they're 2.5 years apart, and personalities totally different from each other. And their interests sometimes coincided in things like Little League and football. But it was a good beginning of where I went. And of course, I volunteered in the school system 16 or 17 years. I actually certified to teach. I always joke when it was when dinosaurs roamed the earth, but I was a stay-at-home mother working a farm and working apartment managing from the time my second son was, well, he was still in diapers and he's 41. So it's been quite a while. And all the different experiences that you have in life, because I waited until I'd raised my family before running for the state house and then, of course, in Congress in 2018. And so I have years of experiences of lots of different volunteer work, lots of different kinds of boards, being in shows. God gave me a beautiful singing voice, but he didn't give me the gene of let me entertain you. So I never wanted to be in the lead role. I would have been perfectly happy standing behind a pillar just singing my heart out. So, you know, I don't have the usual type of personality necessary for politics, but, you know, just all the years of experiences I've had through different boards and different volunteers and managing apartments and managing, you know, I raise bison, by the way. So they're not just fluffy, sweet little animals. They are, we maintain them as nature intended them to be. They are grass fed and they wander over acres and we move them around and then we do harvest them for meat. I've done a lot of different things. I've been in grocery stores cooking and letting people sample. I've been in farmers markets. I've done all kinds of different things, which leads me back to your question. Raising two boys and sitting on bleacher after bleacher while we're quarterbacking or playing basketball or whatever we were doing, all has prepared me pretty well for this rough and tumble sport.
Oh, it's fantastic. Speaking of rough and tumble sport, you are on the Ways and Means Committee. Tell our audience, what does that mean, being on the Ways and Committee? What's that mean to them? And how is the debt ceiling debate being affected by your committee assignment?
Well, the debt ceiling is going to affect everything. But the Ways and Means Committee is the oldest, most prestigious committee in Congress, and it's the only committee that's directly mentioned in the Constitution. So I was humbled and honored because I realized my freshman year, I came in, I was on transportation and infrastructure oversight and climate crisis, but I realized very quickly when I started dealing with issues in my state that trade was so vital. And, you know, it's been the rulers, I guess we would say, or marker or something since the beginning of man trading one thing for another, be it a stick for a rock or, you know, you killed an animal and I just built this really neat canoe. However we traded, it's been around forever. And so with our world in the condition that it's in, trade is very important. And so I've met with over 80 ambassadors, extending my hand to them as the world leader of the United, you know, the United States. We're a pretty big deal, and we need to make sure that we reach out to all of the countries, and particularly our allies. But I, you know, getting back to your question, which basically was about the debt ceiling. Oh, you know, our debt right now is $31.2 trillion, and we've increased it over the last 2 years by about $10 trillion. So it's extremely important that we solve our debt crisis and protect our taxpayers. So, and our, you know, everybody, but I'm focused really on trying to get the reckless spending under control and being very cautious and deliberate with what we do, because I don't want my grandkids shouldering this burden. And ever since I've been around, the spending has just gone up and up and up. And just like, you know, if you gave your son a credit card when he went off to college and he went whoopee and just maxed it out, you might be really, really angry with him, but you still owe that debt. And so you would definitely put a curb on his spending right away, but you're still going to have to pay your debt. And that's making it pretty basic, but that's what we are up against right now.
Well, you know, and that's a great point. You hear the national press likes to say, and it's true, Republicans have also been responsible for this national debt, and they have to a great degree. But as you deal with your Democrat colleagues, where do they think this money is going to keep coming from? Have you asked that question? When is the till run out? Where do they think it just keeps coming from?
Well, you know, they always talk about taxing the rich, but what they don't realize is most of the people that are burdened are the working class people. And I was taught money doesn't grow on trees. I started babysitting when I was old enough to hold a baby on my hip and earning money. And I hate to say I earned 35 cents an hour, but that was the going rate at the time. And then 50 cents, and I really thought I was something when I got up to a dollar. But, you know, I worked as soon as I could. You know, 16 years old, I was out in the workforce. So it comes out of your pocket. Comes out of my pocket, and we have to be strategic in how we handle it.
Well, it's not only comes out of our pockets, the way we're spending, we don't have enough money in either anybody's pockets to keep paying it. I mean, that's the problem, right?
Correct.
You got to start balancing it because there's just not enough money in all of our purses and wallets and money clips. It's just not there.
Well, and I used to joke when I was in the State House, that when my kids left home, I just filled all their closets with my clothes too. And so then I got to the point where I wasn't going to buy anything new unless I took something else out because there wasn't any room. So you can do it pretty basically there. But there are so many items that are funded year after year after year that nobody goes and checks back and thinks, you know, do we still need to do this? Do we still need to park our horse down the street from the Frederick Hotel? I mean, you know, some of these things need to get off the books and be really looked into. And that takes a lot of hard work.
Yes. We're with Congresswoman Carol Miller, Republican from West Virginia. Congresswoman Miller, you have a great bill, which I think all taxpayers should know about. So when the American Rescue Plan was passed in 21, it lowered the threshold of $600 a year with no minimum on the number of transactions the government can tax. So if you get Venmo for somebody selling you a Peloton bike or movie tickets or dinner, after $600, they want to tax it. Is that correct?
That is exactly correct. And it just blows my mind. If you've already bought a drum set or a Peloton or anything, paid taxes on it, and you're downsizing your house or your garage is just full of bikes and all these things, and you want to move them on, and you know people are much more sophisticated in the way they move money around. So I thought it was a big deal when I learned how to do Apple Pay, but to do this is just ridiculous. They've already paid taxes on them once, and they're just basically recycling things into the economy, and it's just not the right thing to do. And, you know, we had it before where the reporting requirement was $20,000 and 200 separate transactions, but this is just another budget gimmick, pay for, is what we call it. And so to lower it to the threshold of $600 is just ridiculous.
Dear listeners, what Congresswoman Miller is talking about is she has proposed H.R. 190, it's Saving Gig Economy Taxpayers Act. And this proposes that independent contractors or those who made money through an e-commerce platform like Venmo or PayPal, we have to earn at least $20,000 and have at least 200 transactions to qualify to submit a 1099. And so you need to pay attention to this. This is really important because of the American Rescue Plan of 21. That was eliminated. So whatever transactions, whatever money you get in for $600, and it's been suspended for a year, they're going to start taxing. So contact your congressperson and tell them, no way, Jose. We have about 1 minute left here before our break. How can people get a hold of you and find out more about, for example, Saving Gig Economy Taxpayer Act, or learn more about you?
Well, you just call the office.
That is an old school way of doing that.
Well, my district office is in Charleston. I have them in Beckley. I have one in Huntington. And I should say I know my own phone number, but I better look it up real fast because I've got different offices that do that. In Washington, it's 202-225-3452. And I mean, as far as the rest for Charleston, Huntington, and Beckley, West Virginians, I mean, we are a family. We are a community-based group. Everybody knows each other and they text each other. And so nobody's ever had any trouble getting a hold of me at home or any of my staff because we just call each other and text. So as far as Washington, it is what I would call fancier or a little bit more professional, but there are plenty of ways to get a hold of us.
Fantastic. We're going to take a break. This is Breaking Battlegrounds. I'm Chuck Warren, and we're with Congresswoman Carol Miller of West Virginia. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Breaking Battlegrounds. I'm your host, Chuck Warren. Today, boy, we're honored to have Congresswoman Carol Miller, representative from West Virginia, serves on the House Ways and Means Committee, and we're excited to have her for the second segment. But folks, are you concerned about your retirement? If you're not, you should be. And that's why Sam and I recommend to you that you go visit yrefi.com. It is a due diligence approved firm that you can earn up to 10.25% rate of return. That's right, 10.25% rate of return. Just log in, type in on your computer, invest, yrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com, or call 888-YREFY. .com and tell them Sam and Chuck sent you, and they'll help you get your retirement plans together. Congresswoman Miller, tell us a little bit about the Energy Export Caucus, which you serve on.
Well, I am a founder of the Energy Export Caucus.
Thank you.
If you take into consideration where I'm from, which is West Virginia, and for 160 years, West Virginia coal and natural gas have been powering the world and helped to build our country from the ground up. And you know, I saw the need, having served in the State House for 12 years in various functions, and recognizing that one of our best exports was now becoming our children, our educated children, because of the war on coal, that people need to understand how important it is for us to have dominance in the energy arena and to do everything cleanly. And so I was trying very hard to make it a bipartisan caucus. We have Henry Cuellar and Lou Correa, one from California and one from Texas. You know, Lou's more interested in windmills and solar panels. Of course, Jody, with the oil that you have in Texas, and, you know, from our end of the world, I didn't mention Jody Arrington. He's the other Republican beside myself co-chairing, along with Henry Cuellar from Texas. I'm stumbling over myself, sorry. And it's so important for us to be energy independent and to have an all of the above platform on how we in the future that we power our country. And, you know, the power grid, as we all saw with that last terrible freezing that went on in Texas, and grids were having a lot of trouble keeping up. So I've taken that committee, and we're going to open it up to anybody that wants to join, because we had a whole lot more Republicans at the time that were more pro-energy. But just to reaffirm our commitment to the all of the above energy and pragmatic energy solutions, the carbon capture, all the things we're working on, where, you know, hydrogen and nuclear and all of these, you know, graphite, graphene, there's so many different things that are going on in our country that we should be supporting and doing whatever we can to flourish. I met with people from the EU 2 years ago plus and said, why in the world are you buying your gas and oil from Russia? Do you understand that they don't like you? And, you know, they thought, oh, no, we're going to be fine. And then lo and behold, they do start cutting off power to Ukraine and various places that, gosh, maybe Carol was kind of right about that. But it's important that we also export to our allies and support them and have the good energy solutions that we want to have and keep being competitive and certainly not buying our energy from countries that are not our friend.
Well, it's the perfect example is what Ukraine war with Russia's invasion has done to Germany in the European Union right now. I mean, you are prophetic to a degree, telling them stop relying on your enemy. And that's what Americans, even those who don't like energy production, and we have some of those in our country, have to realize. Unless you're energy independent, you are beholden to the whims of the world.
That's exactly right. And I'd say, do you not remember your history? Do you not remember? Talk to your parents or grandparents about World War II and what happened. And, oh, how terrible they were to the Ukraine then, them starving them. I mean, the history's there. You just have to learn from it. And we're not teaching enough of that in school, by the way.
Well,
it's a whole nother.
Oh, yeah. It's a whole nother kebang, isn't it? Talking about Ukraine for a minute, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this. Do you just see this being prolonged for another couple years? And do you see a way out of this mess over there?
Well, I'm really glad that Europe and other NATO countries are stepping up because I think they now realize how important it is. And, you know, Russia is the aggressor and the Ukraine was the breadbasket. And if you just look at the pictures of what they've done to that country, it's just absolutely terrible.
Evil.
So, you know, I'm supportive of sanctions against Russia and many things because we are united behind the Ukraine and their fight for freedom and democracy. Don't forget that, you know, Vladimir Putin he needs to be held accountable.
Yes, he does. Let me ask you this. When you go back and we've got 3 minutes left here, but when you go back and do town hall meetings, what is the most common question you're asked by your constituents?
Well, I haven't done a lot of town hall meetings since COVID. We did a lot of those over the phone with bringing physicians in and the rest. But I travel, my district, you know, it's 7 hours for me to drive to D.C. But if you go from Huntington, West Virginia, all the way across Pocahontas County and into those beautiful, beautiful mountains, it's a 5 and 6 hour drive. And so I make sure during these district weeks that I'm meeting with the county commissions, that I'm meeting with the business owners, that I'm meeting with, you know, somebody that owns a truck stop or a restaurant or whatever, just to hear. And so systematically, I'm going, and since we've had the change, and I will put a dig in about bad policy, you know, West Virginia's population has shrunk to the point that we are now just two districts. So I picked up 10 new counties, and so I've got 10 counties to make new friends in, and that is what I look at it as. And so I am traveling around. I'm all the time on the move in the car. So I've changed from being on bleachers to being in the front seat of a car, moving all over the But they are concerned about having employees, supply chain. I'm having trouble getting this, or I'm in the process of building a house and lumber's gone out of the roof and, you know, getting a hold of the plumber. And it's very basic needs that after COVID and people, there was so much money flowing around. There are a lot of people that just haven't bothered to go to work. Anywhere you go, there's a sign, help wanted, you know, please apply. And, you know, when you own a business, employees are very, very important to you. And I don't think sometimes the people on the other side of the aisle truly understand how a business owner respects and appreciates good employees. And so they're struggling and looking for people that want to work. We still are feeling the pain at the pump. We're feeling the pain when you're buying eggs or milk or any of those things. And so that's what I'm hearing about. But I think for the most part, they're just grateful that this pandemic is no longer going to the major factor in everything that we're doing. And that, you know, that was the initial reason why some of that money was spent, is because we were in uncharted territory. But
End this break, but you're absolutely right. We appreciate you coming on the show. We hope you'll visit again. For our listeners, besides listening to your local radio station, you can catch us on breakingbattlegrounds.vote. Congresswoman Miller, thanks a million.
Welcome back to Breaking Battlegrounds with your host, Chuck Warren. Sam Stone now joining in studio. And on the line with us today, another fantastic guest, Republican Congressman Josh Burkean from Oklahoma's 2nd Congressional District, a committed Christian, husband, father, and fourth-generation rancher in Cole County, Oklahoma. Boy, you have been facing all the headwinds in your own profession. Now you go to D.C., and you are in the middle of a debt fight of a lifetime.
Yeah, it's you know, people don't realize, I know it sounds, anytime the intensity of the moment is upon you, you think this is the worst it's ever been, but people have to understand, since the past 85 years, we've had 100 different debt ceiling debates. This is something on average we do every year. And the most major reforms on spending, not that they've been transformative, but most of the major spending reforms, not transformative, have occurred since 1985. There's been 11 of these, and it's because of this type of leverage that the debt ceiling brings forth.
So let me ask you this question. I think we're in agreement. Us defaulting is not a good thing, correct?
No, I mean, but we're not going to default. Even when you look at the 95 Contract America class, when you have a two November, then December standoff, government shutdown, they're going to pay the interest on the debt. They're going to pay they're going to prioritize. And really what it creates the opportunity to do is for the discussion about where are the areas that the federal government's supposed to be involved and where are the areas that they shouldn't. I mean, we're going to take care of Medicare and Social Security and the interest on the debt and defense. And the sky is falling type discussion that happens only serves big government spending interests.
So what we agree with you here in the studio, you know, look, I think all of us here are talking. We agree you can't default, and B, we can't continue on this path we're on. They're not sustainable, period. It can't happen. And the more we continue on this spending path, the more we give up our sovereignty. I mean, that's just the reality of it, because other people are making decisions. So, for example, we're spending $750 billion a year on interest. And people want to talk about, well, we need money for this or that. Well, you're spending $750 billion on your credit card bill. I mean, that can't continue, right? So
let's break these numbers down to your point. Okay,
go ahead.
So the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, says that we are, before the end of this decade, 7 years, we're going to be spending $1 trillion just in interest payments on our debt. That's not principal. That's money flushed down the toilet that is the exact same amount. Actually, it's more. We spend about $800 billion, a little over $800 billion right now in defense of our country, all our military, all expenditures. We are, within 7 years, going to be spending more on interest to service our debt than we spend on our debt. What a waste.
Well,
and then the CBO is saying that within another little over 25 years, almost half of our entire federal budget will just be interest on our debt. So we are headed towards fiscal collapse. You read economists, and you got to be careful with them because most of them are professors funded by the federal government through colleges. But the wisest one I've read across the statement from says, we all know this can't continue forever, will come to an end. That's what we're facing. We think it'll happen to everybody else, but not us.
It always happens to the other guy, but not us. My question is, do you think your constituents understand the gravity of the problem?
Well, that's why it's important for people to know the numbers.
Right.
I mean, people hear $1 trillion tossed around, and no one's going to address the problem unless they can really understand the problem. And most people, I think, look, I come from the business world, and I've had a time in state politics. But when you're in the business world trying to run a business, you don't have time to get your head around the problems of the nation. You're trying to, the problems of your household, the problems of your business. And so to put this into perspective, everyone can start understanding, go, wait a minute, I've got to demand my elected official start cutting spending. Can we grow can we have an economic boom that can help us out of this in part? But we cannot grow our way out of this problem. We are also going to have to cut. We're going to have to go after the areas that the federal government has brought in that were not a part of the 18 enumerated powers, Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution said that was the role of the federal government. We've got to start identifying, is that really a role of the federal government, or is that a role to the states or the individuals?
Well, that's absolutely critical, I think, at this point, because I don't think folks realize how much the annual deficit has increased in the last 5 years from, I think, $300 billion a year to over $3 trillion, right?
So I can go by my kids by how much we've grown our national indebtedness. So keep in mind, until 1981, we did not even have up to $1 trillion in national indebtedness. And to put $1 trillion in perspective, I would have to count out a second at a time a dollar, lay a dollar down on the table, take me a second, pull my hand back, bring another dollar out there. It would take me 31,000 years if I didn't eat or sleep to put a dollar at a time and get to $1 trillion. 31,000 years to count out $1 trillion.
Wow.
And so we tripped $1 trillion in 1980. And then about 2007,
Congressman, I'm going to hold you up there. We're going to continue this when Breaking Battlegrounds comes back in just a moment.
You deserve a home that's beautiful and stylish. At Overstock, you don't have to choose between low prices and quality. Find new on-trend home goods that reflect your taste and don't compromise on value. You can be proud of your home and design a space where you feel like you, all under budget. Plus, you get free shipping on everything in the continental United States. Overstock is where quality furniture and decor costs less.
Welcome back to Breaking Battlegrounds with your host, Chuck Warren. I'm Sam Stone. On the line with us right now, Congressman Josh Burkine from Oklahoma's 2nd Congressional District. When we went to break, Congressman, you were talking about the explosion in the national debt from 1980, just reaching $1 trillion at that point to where we are today. I'd love for you to pick up where we left off.
Yeah, so 1980, we reached $1 trillion. And then by the 2004 era, we're about $7 trillion. By the time we get to 2010, we're at about $15 trillion. And here we are, a little over 11 years later, we've gone from $15 trillion to $31 trillion. We have doubled our national debt in the last 11 years.
That's astounding.
We are spending spree laden. And we have to have somebody sitting in the saddle that pulls the horses around and says, whoa.
I think people understand Einstein's maxim about the power of compound interest in their personal lives and how it can apply to wealth generation or debt creation. But very few people, Chuck, seem to understand it on a national level.
So, Congressman, how do we start, besides having the government, federal government actually focusing on what they're supposed to focus on? What is a plan you think, and I mean, this is just ballpark here. What do we start doing to pay down this national debt? I mean, that's
well, we've got to prioritize. And so I'm on the budget committee. We are looking at the areas of prioritization. The great thing is we have founders that were brilliant. They wrote Article 1, Section 8. They listed 18 enumerated powers. And I'll just name you some of those. Some of those 18 enumerated powers are, one-fourth of them is war. Declaration of war, military, army, navy, that was supposed to be the areas the federal government was to have in their bailiwick. And then you had the post office and post office roads and piracy enforcement, coining money, borrowing as in one of those enumerated powers. I'm really good at that one. regulation of commerce. But what we've done is outside, I didn't list the full 18 of them. But then it gets to the 10th Amendment. They wrote all powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, just to abbreviate what's said in the 10th Amendment, are reserved to the states or the people. What we've done is, there's a book that Stephen Moore that advised Reagan and Trump, people recognize his face, he was at Cato, et cetera. Stephen Moore, and it's called Restoring the Dream. And he said in 1900, 60% of all tax collection was done at the local level. And tax collection and tax spend, 60% on the local level. And only 20% in 1900 was on the federal level. And by the time we got to the mid-90s, those numbers had flipped. And 67% by the mid-90s of all tax collection and tax spend was on the federal level, and only 20% was on the local level.
Wow. Congressman,
what's happened is we perverted what was the role of the federal government versus what was the state and the individual responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to posit something else because it's something we've talked about on this program. If we did what you said and cut the federal government back to its enumerated powers, we would be returning a lot of power to the states and to local jurisdictions. And I think given the division in this country, that's potentially one of the best things we could do to start healing is allow people to live in their states as they choose with less intrusion from the federal government. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, I agree. And James Madison agreed. You know, they never wanted the minutiae of the details to be done on the federal level. Federalist 45, James Madison writes, the powers of the Fed are to be few and defined. He was talking about the articles, those enumerated powers in Article 1, Section 8. And the powers of the Fed are to be few and defined. The powers of the state are to be numerous and indefinite. They wanted laboratories of democracy, experimentation across state lines, where you could look at success or failure, and another state could say, oh, we're going to try that. Or you see a failure and go, we're not going to try that. We're going to do something different. We don't have experimentation because so much of this is top down.
Well, and you served as an Oklahoma legislator. Oklahoma, for folks who don't know, has been a very well, I mean, generally very well-run state. You guys are in good shape. Your citizens are happy. You've got a balanced budget. Isn't that the kind of thing that everyone should have the power in their hands to do?
Yeah, we should. I ran the bill that put a cap on our state debt when I was a state senator. Now, to be frank with you, they play loose with that. We have tax back and tax supported debt that there's ways to get around the balanced budget.
Right.
So I had to put one of the things we need to do on the federal level, if we could ever get the courage to do it, is, you know, a constitutional amendment. And what some things I've learned, some things people across the country have learned, even in states that have a balanced budget, is you've got to make sure that you don't have the gimmicks that are played versus tax back versus tax supported bond financing.
Bureaucrats will always find a way to get around the restriction on spending.
Congressman, let's talk quickly here. So China decided to put a spy balloon going across America, which apparently the Biden administration has known about for more than a day or two. What should we be doing about that? I just saw that our Secretary of State has canceled his trip to China because of this. As a congressman, what do you think we should do about this infraction?
Well, I think we have to be a country that's perceived, number one, in strength. And I also think that we need to return back to a place to where the Congress, I cited a while ago, war powers. Most people don't realize, because since 1973, since the War Powers Act, we have allowed the president to be the one that's looked to in terms of the one who gets us into conflicts. And I contend, when you look at the five wars that we declared and were successful in, the War of 1812, Mexican-American War, Spanish-American War, World War One, World War Two, the people were with the war declaration, and we saw those wars through. And our founders were brilliant. They said the Congress, in Article 1, Section 8, is the one to declare war. James Madison, one of my favorite fathers, you know, who's known as the father of the Constitution, said there's no greater wisdom to be found in the Constitution than the question of the clause, which leaves the question of war and peace to the legislature and not the executive. And I think what we've done is we have empowered the president through these War Powers Acts to make America look weak too often. And our yes needs to be yes, and our no needs to be no in America again. And Congress needs to return some powers back to itself as to when we're going to get in a conflict, we're serious about it. And the will of the American people follows the Congress.
So, what? You absolutely agree on that. So, what should Congress? What should we do about them setting a spy balloon over our country, over Montana, looking at our nuclear silos?
Well, I think that the Congress needs to be talking about it. I think the Congress needs to be investigating. I think the oversight needs to occur. And then we need to have a president who operates in strength, and a president who is perceived as someone of strength. That's been missing.
Yeah, absolutely. So what has surprised you, being you're a new member of Congress? Have there been any surprises so far since you've been there?
Well, my first week, being one of the 20, with the speaker's vote, that was, I'd hoped that we could have worked out getting some rule changes and a direction on true spending reform. I'm grateful that the 20 of us that stood got great concessions on spending reform and going back to where the rank and file members have more power to put amendments, spending cut amendments specifically on the floor. Not a single amendment had been allowed from the floor in the last 6 years, but under both Democrats and Republicans. And I will tell you, I'm excited about where Speaker McCarthy is having our conference leadership lead us right now. We are having strong conversations about discretionary spending.
Yep.
Discretionary spending. It's not Medicare or Social Security, but we've grown the discretionary spending, the minutia, the details, the stuff people look at and go, why should the federal government be involved in that? We're having strong conversations about if we've grown those areas since, COVID about 20% since 2019, pre-COVID, why wouldn't we look at some 2019 levels on what we were doing on some of that discretionary spending? Why is it such a big ask?
Correct.
And that's coming up. Conversation.
Well, and I believe you and your colleagues who did that are owed a lot of credit and a lot of kudos that you took a lot of slings and arrows at that time. You had people calling you, all sorts of names right up to traitor. But the actions and you guys standing firm on that have made a huge difference in how Kevin McCarthy and this Congress is operating. So I would like to
100%
thank you for that.
Well, thank you. And I want to say this. I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged by the leadership that Speaker McCarthy is exemplifying. And it's there's leverage that was provided to say let's go right. Ronald Reagan talked about we need a Republican Party that's lifting bold colors, not pale pastels. The party that stands for certain principles that won't be moved. And that's what we're advocating for. You don't get people to come in and say, I want to vote Republican because they think they're going to get the uniparty. You get people wanting to vote Republican because they think these guys mean what they say and say what they mean.
Did Donald Trump create an opportunity for more Republicans? I mean, the one thing I most credit him with is that he took bold action. And I think people were desperate for bold action. And there's a lot more room, I think, for that now in Congress and in various state houses because of him.
No, he went after political correctness, which is destroying us. Political correctness and people just telling others from their positions in politics what they think people want to hear, it's destroying us. It's why people have got to get educated on where we're headed financially.
We have
to have people shoot straight. And I was proud to see what Donald Trump did. And the guys that I'm blue collar. I grew up in the cutting horse industry, ranching, cattle industry, dozer, excavator, trucking. That's my small business background. You know, the blue-collar guys, that resonates with them. They want a man's man that's going to stand up. And when he tells you something, you know that he's not turning around whispering, you know, out the other side of his mouth to someone else. People are sick of that. They want the truth.
Yeah, I think what you're talking about and what Washington has been missing for a long time is that simply get it done ethos that defines the blue collar, the blue collar portion of America. They're just looking for results, and when someone steps up and delivers, they're going to back them to the hilt.
There's a scripture. Men of truth, those who hate dishonest gain. And you place these as leaders over thousands, hundreds, fifties, tens. I've got the last part kind of paraphrased, but that the point is, if you can find somebody that you look at and go, I may not always agree with you, but if I think that you're a truth, and I feel like that you're not up there for self-advancement, and you're not there to line your pockets, I can get behind somebody like that. I don't have to agree with you. I just got to know your motives are pure.
Great point.
Yeah, absolutely. Point. And those type of voters who look at the world that way are frankly the key swing voters in the last 20 years, because they will go to whoever they see who evinces that sort of character.
Yeah. Vanity asks the question, is it popular? Cowardice asks the question, is it safe? And conscience asks the question, is it right? I learned that. I worked for a guy by the name of Tom Coburn, who was known as being a truth teller. Many years ago, I worked for him. And we need people that you look at and go, I'll go with you because I trust you.
Senator Coburn, the greatest waste fighter in modern American history.
He was a great dude.
Besides being a truth teller that he taught you, what else did you learn from him when you worked for him?
He was talking $7 trillion national indebtedness. He was talking about when I worked almost 20 years ago, everybody opened their eyes, taking in the first breath of air, owing $24,000 as their share of the national debt that they would only pay off through a lower standard of living. That number, if I got a 15-month-old, that's part of why I ran. Is looking at her and knowing where are we doing to secure the blessing of liberty for ourselves and our posterity, as the Constitution says. And I know her share now is $94,000. And when I worked for Coburn 20 years ago, the baby that was born in that year was $24,000. It's $94,000 when a baby opens their eyes and takes in their first breath of air. And that's just the $31 trillion. That's not even the $20 trillion unfunded liability of Social Security. Medicare insolvency upon us in 5 years, the actuary tells us, because it's got a $35 trillion hole in it. What we owe veterans, what we owe federal employees for pensions, intergovernmental debt. We're at north of $120 trillion sum total debt liability right now. And out of all the countries, we're number 12 out of countries just on the $31 trillion of our debt to GDP ratio. People have no idea how bad a shape financially we are as a nation.
I've been doing this a long time, and I didn't realize it had gotten up to $94,000 per person. That's amazing and terrifying. Congressman, we have just about 30 seconds before we wrap up the program here. Tell folks how they can follow you and your work.
Burkeen.house.gov, www.burkeen.house.gov. My last name is very difficult to pronounce.
We'll have it up on our website and Twitter for folks who want to follow you there.
And look, I would just say we need a great awakening in this country. For our country to turn, politics is different culture. If we don't have a great awakening where people are willing to put the nation's best interest and personal self-interest, we're not going to sacrifice for the next generation. We've inherited a great nation, and now we're borrowing it from our kids' future.
That's the final word. Congressman, thank you so much for joining us. Folks, Breaking Battlegrounds back on the air next week. Be sure to download and tune in for our podcast-only segment if you enjoy that. We are available on everywhere you can find a podcast. Breaking Battlegrounds back next week.
Welcome back to Breaking Battlegrounds. I'm your host, Chuck Warren, with Sam Stone. Today, we are honored to have the Honorable Christopher Campbell. He's a chief policy strategist for Kroll, based in a New York office, but lives in Miami. He is formerly Deputy Undersecretary of Treasury. He was on the Finance Committee, led the Finance Committee for the U.S. Senate. He is a man who understands numbers in the government, and we're honored to have him on. Chris, thanks for coming.
Chuck, it's great to be with you again. It's always an honor to be on your show.
A pleasure to have you. We're going to play a little clip here from Seinfeld. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Is this my stereo?
Oh, hey, you got it.
Hey, what happened to my stereo? It's all smashed up.
That's right. Now, it looks like it was broken during shipping,
and I insured it for $400.
But you're supposed to get me a refund.
You can't get a refund. Your warranty expired 2 years ago.
So we're going to make the post office pay for my new stereo now?
It's a write-off for them.
How is it a write-off?
They just write it off.
Write it off what?
Jerry, all these big companies, they write off everything.
You don't even know what a write-off is.
Do you?
No, I don't.
But they do. And they're the ones writing it off.
Wish I had the last 20 seconds of my life back.
What? So one thing that they do in Washington is we throw out all these terms, tax credits, write-offs, and the American public doesn't know what it is. So now we hear the debt ceiling. We're $31 trillion in debt. I don't think people understand what that means. They're just sort of told, and it's true, we can't default. And at the same time, we can't continue down this path of adding more and more and more to us because, you know, people want to be paid back eventually. What do you see coming about here in negotiations with House Republicans and the Biden administration? I mean, how do we get out of this impasse?
Yeah, Chuck, this is, you know, it's an extremely great question. I'm often asked the question. It's there's really no really good answer to the question, but I'll say this as I like to liken the debt ceiling to people, something that everyone understands, which is that almost everyone in America has a credit card. And you spend money on the credit card and you pay your credit card off, right? You may pay it monthly, you may pay it all at once. Some people can't pay it and they get, you know, then the credit card companies start calling them. But what happens if you just choose not to pay your credit cards altogether? What typically happens in America is that, you know, they start, you know, sending threatening letters and they put it in the collections and those kinds of things. But one thing is a real challenge is if you're dependent upon a credit card to live and you must use a credit card every single month, but you don't pay your credit card, another credit card company is not going to give you credit. So there's, so you're in this left in this impossible situation, which is I have to have a credit card to live to be able to pay my bills, but no one's willing to give me a credit card. That's effectively what we're talking about when the American government starts talking about defaulting. So if we're not going to pay back those that have lent us money in the past, they're not going to give us additional borrowing authority. They're not going to lend us more money in the future. And if they do use it, give us more money, it's going to become a lot more costly. So we're actually going to have to pay a lot more for the money they would give us if we had not defaulted or not paid our bills back.
So
that's really exactly this.
That in a